It just goes to show you that these measurements are merely tools and should never lead to false assumptions. The fact is, I didn't lose any muscle during my 28 days of fasting, and that's pretty remarkable. It goes against everything commonly believed about the side effects of fasting. Dr. Fung discusses the myth that fasting causes muscle loss in more detail later in this book. Conclusion: a fasting fan. I'm still tweaking my own personal fasting protocol, taking into account that I probably need longer fasts to receive the most benefits, and that, as I've learned, it is incredibly important for me to try not to fast during stressful times, even when it's happy stress. Traveling makes longer-term fasting a no-go for me, although I will easily do an intermittent fast if the flight is under 4 hours, and so do any out-of-the-ordinary activities, such as writing books or attending conferences. This is a great lesson I learned from my fasting escapades. If you're now inspired to give fasting a try for yourself, let me encourage you to just do it. Even if you begin by simply skipping lunch, you can work your way up to fasting for a few days in a row, and the benefits will be tremendous. Dr. Fung will talk in more detail about those benefits in the coming chapters, but suffice it to say, if you're struggling with obesity and or type 2 diabetes, fasting can have an incredible effect on weight and blood sugar. I've seen it with my own eyes, even when I was still skeptical about fasting. I understand that it can be a real challenge to not eat for a period of time. It's especially tough because in our modern world, food is instantly available on every street corner. But what if you decided to buck the trend? Abstain from eating even for a short period of time and see how you do. Forget about what you think might happen, and instead embrace the experience to see what does happen. I'm not going to tell you it will solve all of your weight and health issues. It's certainly not a cure-all. But fasting can become one of the most practical tools that can empower you to take back control of your own health. That's a goal we should all be striving for. Meet the Fasting All-Stars. Abel James. Abel James is a New York Times best-selling author and modern-day Renaissance man. He stars as a celebrity coach on ABC television and has been featured in People magazine, Wired, Entertainment Tonight, and NPR. As host of the number one podcast in more than 8 countries, Fat Burning Man, Abel has helped millions reclaim their health and perform at their best with cutting-edge science, outdoor workouts, and outrageously good food. Abel has keynoted for the federal government, lectured at Ivy League universities, and advised Fortune 500 companies including Microsoft, Danaher, and Lockheed Martin. He was named one of the 100 most influential people in health and fitness by Greatest in 2015 and 2016. Distinguished as a senior fellow with honors at Dartmouth College, Abel created his own curriculum to specialize in brain science, music, and technology. He later published his research in The Musical Brain, which became a number one bestseller. Also a songwriter and multi-instrumentalist, Abel has won several awards in writing and performance arts, including Outstanding Achievement in Songwriting. Abel lives with his wife in Austin, Texas. He enjoys strong coffee and cheesecake, preferably together. Amy Berger. Amy Berger, MSCNSNTP, is the author of the book The Alzheimer's Antidote. She has a master's degree in human nutrition and is a certified nutrition specialist and nutritional therapy practitioner. As a U.S. Air Force veteran, she has a special interest in the use of low-carbohydrate and ketogenic diets for neurological health, including traumatic brain injury, as well as improving metabolic conditions such as type 2 diabetes and obesity. After spending years doing what health and nutrition experts claimed were all the right things to lose weight and maintain optimal health and failing to experience the expected results, Amy discovered that the conventional advice about low-calorie, low-fat dieting and exercise did not lead to the promised outcomes. In pursuing training in nutrition and physiology, she learned that much of what we currently believe about healthy diets is misguided and in many cases downright incorrect. Having learned these lessons the hard way, Amy has dedicated her career to showing others that vibrant health does not require starvation, deprivation, or living at the gym. Men and women cannot live by lettuce alone. Real people need real food. You can read her blog and find more of her work at tuitnutrition.com. Dr. Michael Ruscio. Dr. Michael Ruscio helps people identify why they are sick and helps them get well naturally. He works with patients across the country, utilizing lab-based natural medicine treatments to help a variety of patients, from athletes to the chronically ill, overcome health problems, and achieve optimal health and well-being. Visit his website, drruscio.com, for more information. Dr. Burt Herring. Burt Herring, MD, Dr. Burt, pioneered daily intermittent fasting, first experimenting with it himself in 1995, then studying it further and sharing it with the world in 2005 with the first guide to starting and reaping the benefits of a daily fasting eating cycle, the Fast Five Diet, and the Fast Five Lifestyle. Dr. Burt's focus is on real-world solutions, things that work for real people with real lives and real commitments, like kids and jobs. He pays attention to what works for people who can't exercise 8 hours per day, and he keeps his skepticism high when it comes to results that only concern lab rats, short-duration studies of only a few weeks' duration, and studies in which people are being observed because, as Heisenberg said, observation changes things. Dr. Burt also has little interest in temporary solutions. Temporary solutions may work, but if you can't sustain them, they can't become part of your lifestyle. He wants to arm people with the tools necessary to fight culture's drive to overeat and help them build a customized, low-hassle way of living that achieves a healthy balance and works for the long term. Health goes far beyond diet, so Dr. Burt does too. To see more, look for his TEDx talk, Did I Enrich Today?, which has over 235,000 views, or visit his website, burtherring.com. Megan Ramos. Megan Ramos worked with Dr. Fung for over 16 years as a medical researcher prior to co-founding the Intensive Dietary Management Program. Having helped hundreds of patients incorporate fasting into their lives, there is likely nobody else in the world with her clinical expertise. Thomas N. Seyfried. Thomas N. Seyfried is a professor of biology at Boston College and received his Ph.D. in genetics and biochemistry from the University of Illinois Urbana in 1976. He did his undergraduate work at the University of New England, where he recently received the Distinguished Alumni Achievement Award. He also holds a master's degree in genetics from Illinois State University. He was a postdoctoral fellow in the neurology department at the Yale University School of Medicine and then served on the faculty as an assistant professor in neurology. Thomas Seyfried served with distinction in the U.S. Army's 1st Cavalry Division during the Vietnam War and received numerous medals and commendations. Other awards and honors have come from such diverse organizations as the American Oil Chemists Society, the National Institutes of Health, the American Society for Neurochemistry, and the Ketogenic Diet Special Interest Group of the American Epilepsy Society. Dr. Seyfried previously served as chair of the Scientific Advisory Committee for the National Tay-Sachs and Allied Diseases Association and presently serves on several editorial boards, including those for Nutrition and Metabolism, Neurochemical Research, Journal of Lipid Research, and ASN Neuro, where he is a senior editor. Dr. Seyfried has over 170 peer-reviewed publications and is the author of Cancer as a Metabolic Disease, On the Origin, Management, and Prevention of Cancer. His full list of peer-reviewed publications can be found on PubMed at ncbi.nlm.nih.gov/PubMed. Mark Sisson. Mark Sisson is the author of the best-selling book, The Primal Blueprint, as well as The Primal Blueprint Cookbook and the top-rated health and fitness blog, marksdailyapple.com. He is also the founder of Primal Kitchen, a company devoted to designing, manufacturing, and distributing healthy, great-tasting food products made with clean proteins, healthy fats, and no sugars. Rob Wolf. Rob Wolf, a former research biochemist, is the New York Times bestselling author of The Paleo Solution, The Original Human Diet. A student of Professor Lauren Cordaine, author of The Paleo Diet, Rob has transformed the lives of hundreds of thousands of people around the world via his top-ranked iTunes podcast, book, and seminars. Rob has been a review editor for the Journal of Nutrition and Metabolism, is co-founder of the nutrition and athletic training journal The Performance Menu, is co-owner of NorCal Strength and Conditioning, one of Men's Health's top 30 gyms in America, and is a consultant for the Naval Special Warfare Resiliency Program. He serves on the board of directors and advisors for Specialty Health Inc., Paleo FX, and Paleo Magazine. Rob is a former California State powerlifting champion, 565-pound squat, 345-pound bench, 565-pound deadlift, and a 6-0 amateur kickboxer. He coaches athletes at the highest levels of competition and consults with Olympians and world champions in MMA, motocross, rowing, and triathlon. Rob has provided seminars in strength and nutrition and conditioning to a number of entities, including NASA, Naval Special Warfare, the Canadian Light Infantry, and the United States Marine Corps. Rob lives in Reno, Nevada with his wife Nikki and daughters Zoe and Sagan. Here's an acronym to remind you why you're fasting. F. Fears. Forget them. A. Advantages. So many. S. Schedule. Whenever you need it. T. Therapeutic. For so many health concerns like obesity, diabetes, cancer, and Alzheimer's. Part 1. What is fasting and why is it good for you? Chapter 1. What is fasting? Mentioning fasting as a treatment for obesity and type 2 diabetes always gets the same eye-rolling response. Starvation? That's the answer? You're going to starve people? No, that is not it at all. I'm not going to starve people. I'm asking them to fast. Fasting is completely different from starvation in one crucial way. Control. Starvation is the involuntary abstention from eating. It is neither deliberate nor controlled. Starving people have no idea when and where their next meal will come from. This happens in times of war and famine when food is scarce. Fasting, on the other hand, is the voluntary abstention from eating for spiritual health or other reasons. Food is readily available, but you choose not to eat it. No matter what your reason for abstaining, the fact that fasting is voluntary is a critical distinction. Starving and fasting should never be confused with each other, and the terms should never be used interchangeably. Fasting and starving live on opposite sides of the world. It is the difference between recreational running and running because a lion is chasing you. Starvation is forced upon you by outside forces. Fasting, on the other hand, may be done for any period of time from a few hours to months on end. You may begin a fast at any time of your choosing, and you may end a fast at will, too. You can start or stop a fast for any reason or for no reason at all. Fasting has no standard duration. Since it is merely the absence of eating, any time that you are not eating, you are technically fasting. For example, you may fast between dinner and breakfast the next day, a period of 12 hours or so. In that sense, fasting should be considered a part of everyday life. Consider the term breakfast. The word refers to the meal that breaks your fast, which is done daily. The word itself implicitly acknowledges that fasting, far from being some sort of cruel and unusual punishment, is performed daily, even if only for a short duration. It is not something strange, but a part of everyday life. I've sometimes called fasting the ancient secret of weight loss. Why? It is certainly an ancient technique dating thousands of years, as we'll discuss in Chapter 2. Fasting is as old as humankind, far older than any other dietary technique. But how is fasting a secret? Although fasting has been practiced for millennia, it has been largely forgotten as a dietary therapy. There are virtually no books about it. There are few websites dedicated to fasting. There is almost no mention of it in newspapers or magazines. Even its very mention draws stares of incredulity. It is a secret hiding in plain sight. How did this happen? Through the power of advertising, big food companies have slowly changed how we think of fasting. Instead of being a purifying, healthful tradition, it's now seen as something to be feared and avoided at all costs. Fasting was extremely bad for business, after all. Selling food is difficult if people won't eat. Slowly but inevitably, fasting has become forbidden. Nutritional authorities now allege that even skipping one single meal will have dire health consequences. You must always eat breakfast. You must snack constantly all day long. You should eat a bedtime snack. You must never, ever miss a meal. These messages are everywhere, on television, in the newspaper, in books. Hearing them over and over again creates the illusion that they are absolutely true and scientifically proven beyond a doubt. The truth is exactly the opposite. There is no correlation whatsoever between constant eating and good health. Sometimes authorities will try to convince you that you can't fast because you'll be consumed by hunger. It's too difficult. It is simply impossible. Here, the truth is also the exact opposite. Fasting All-Stars, Mark Sisson. I had certainly read a ton on the anti-aging benefits of fasting, but I was hesitant to try it for myself, fearing I might lose precious muscle mass. Then on a long overseas flight with no food available and not having eaten since the previous night, I was forced into a 36-hour fast. I found myself completely energetic and clear-headed. Based on that experience, I started experimenting with how long I could go without eating, actually without feeling like I had to eat. I found it could be quite long periods of time. I also noticed that I didn't lose mass or strength, which was key for me. Can you fast? Yes, it's been done by literally millions of people around the world for thousands of years. Is it unhealthy? No. In fact, it has enormous health benefits. Will you lose weight? If you don't eat anything for a day, do you think you will lose weight? Of course. Fasting is effective, simple, flexible, practical, and virtually guaranteed to work. Ask a child how to lose weight, and she will probably say to skip a few meals. So what's the problem? Nobody makes money when you fast. Not big food, not big pharma. Nobody wants you to find out the ancient secret of weight loss. The disappearance of daily fasting. In the 1970s, a typical American ate 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner with no snacks. Data compiled from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey showed an average of 3 eating opportunities per day. I grew up in the 1970s and remember it well. What would happen if we tried to get an after-school snack? Usually there would be a slap on the hand and an admonition that you'll ruin your dinner. A typical day might include breakfast at 8 a.m., lunch at noon, and dinner at 6 p.m. That means that we would be eating for 10 hours of the day, which is nicely balanced by 14 hours of fasting. And guess what? Obesity and type 2 diabetes were not nearly the problems they are today. Fast forward to today. Instead of trying to stop snacking, we actively encourage it in both adults and children. Some even feel that snacking more will help lose weight, as ridiculous as that sounds. Consider my son's typical schedule. He eats breakfast the moment he wakes up. There's a mid-morning snack at school, then lunch, then an after-school snack, dinner, and then another snack between halves of his soccer game, and then maybe a bedtime snack. He's eating 6 or 7 times a day. This is by no means atypical. The NHANES data shows that the average American eats 5 or 6 times per day. So instead of having balanced periods of feeding and fasting, we are now eating perhaps 16 to 18 hours of the day and only fasting for 6 to 8 hours. Is it any wonder that obesity has become an epidemic? To examine the reasons that fasting is more beneficial than most people think, let's start by looking at what actually goes on in the body when we eat and when we fast. What happens when we eat? When we eat, we ingest more food energy than we can immediately use. Some of this energy needs to be stored away for later. The key hormone involved in both the storage and use of food energy is insulin, which rises during meals. Both carbohydrates and protein stimulate insulin. Fat triggers a far smaller insulin effect, but it's rarely eaten alone. Insulin has 2 major functions. First, it allows the body to immediately start using food energy. Carbohydrates are absorbed and rapidly turned into glucose, raising blood sugar levels. Insulin allows glucose to enter directly into most cells of the body, which use it for energy. Proteins are broken down into amino acids and absorbed, and excess amino acids may also be turned into glucose. Protein does not raise blood glucose, but it can raise insulin levels. The effect is variable, and it surprises many people to learn that some proteins can stimulate insulin as much as some carbohydrate-containing foods. Fats are directly absorbed as fat and have minimal effect on insulin. Second, insulin helps store the excess energy. There are 2 ways to store the energy. Glucose molecules can be linked into long chains called glycogen and then stored in the liver. There is, however, a limit to the amount of glycogen that can be stored away. Once this limit is reached, the body starts to turn glucose into fat. This process is called de novo lipogenesis, literally making fat from new. This newly created fat can be stored in the liver or in fat deposits in the body. While turning glucose into fat is a more complicated process than storing it as glycogen, there is no limit to the amount of fat that can be created. Eat food, increase insulin, store sugar in liver, produce fat in liver. No food, fasting, decrease insulin, burn stored sugar, burn body fat. What happens when we fast? The process of using and storing food energy that occurs when we eat goes in reverse when we fast. Insulin levels drop, signaling the body to start burning stored energy. Glycogen, the glucose that's stored in the liver, is the most easily accessible energy source, and the liver stores enough to provide energy for 24 hours or so. After that, the body starts to break down stored body fat for energy. So you see, the body really only exists in 2 states, the fed, high insulin state, and the fasted, low insulin state. Either we are storing food energy or we are burning food energy. If eating and fasting are balanced, then there is no net weight gain. If, however, we spend the majority of the day storing food energy because we're in the fed state, then over time we will gain weight. What is needed then is to restore balance by increasing the amount of time we burn food energy by going into the fasted state. The transition from the fed state to the fasted state occurs in several stages, as classically described by George Cahill, one of the leading experts in fasting physiology. Number 1. Feeding. Blood sugar levels rise as we absorb the incoming food, and insulin levels rise in response to moving glucose into cells, which use it for energy. Excess glucose is stored as glycogen in the liver or converted to fat. Number 2. The post-absorptive phase, 6 to 24 hours after beginning fasting. At this point, blood sugar and insulin levels begin to fall. To supply energy, the liver starts to break down glycogen, releasing glucose. Glycogen stores last for approximately 24 to 36 hours. Number 3. Gluconeogenesis. 24 hours to 2 days after beginning fasting. At this point, glycogen stores have run out. The liver manufactures new glucose from amino acids in a process called gluconeogenesis, literally making new glucose. In non-diabetic persons, glucose levels fall but stay within the normal range. Number 4. Ketosis. 2 to 3 days after beginning fasting. Low insulin levels stimulate lipolysis, the breakdown of fat for energy. Triglycerides, the form of fat used for storage, are broken into the glycerol backbone and 3 fatty acid chains. The glycerol is used for gluconeogenesis, so the amino acids formerly used can be reserved for protein synthesis. The fatty acids are used directly for energy by most tissues of the body, though not the brain. The body uses fatty acids to produce ketone bodies, which are capable of crossing the blood-brain barrier and are used by the brain for energy. After 4 days of fasting, approximately 75% of the energy used by the brain is provided by ketones. The 2 major types of ketones produced are beta-hydroxybutyrate and acetoacetate, which can increase over 70-fold during fasting. Number 5. The protein conservation phase, 5 days after beginning fasting. High levels of growth hormone maintain muscle mass and lean tissues. The energy for basic metabolism is almost entirely supplied by fatty acids and ketones. Blood glucose is maintained by gluconeogenesis using glycerol. Increased norepinephrine, adrenaline, levels prevent any decrease in metabolic rate. There is a normal amount of protein turnover, but it is not being used for energy. In essence, what we are describing here is the process of switching from burning glucose to burning fat. Fat is simply the body's stored food energy. In times of low food availability, stored food is naturally released to fill the void. The body does not burn muscle in an effort to feed itself until all the fat stores are used up. More on this myth in Chapter 3. One critical point to underscore is that these mechanisms are entirely natural and entirely normal. Periods of low food availability have always been a natural part of human history, and our body evolved mechanisms to adapt to this fact of Paleolithic life. Otherwise, we would not have survived as a species. There are no adverse health consequences to activating these protocols, except in the case of malnourishment. You should not fast if you're malnourished, of course, and extreme fasting can cause malnourishment too. The body is not shutting down, it's merely changing fuel sources from food to our own fat. It does this with the help of several hormonal adaptations to fasting. Insulin goes down. A decreased insulin level is one of the most consistent hormonal effects of fasting. All foods raise insulin to some degree. Refined carbohydrates tend to raise insulin the most and fatty foods the least, but insulin still goes up in both cases. Therefore, the most effective method of reducing insulin is to avoid all foods altogether. During the initial stages of fasting, insulin and blood glucose levels fall but remain in the normal range, maintained by the breakdown of glycogen as well as gluconeogenesis. After glycogen is used up, the body begins to switch over to burning fat for energy. Longer duration fasts reduce insulin more dramatically. Regularly lowering insulin levels leads to improved insulin sensitivity. Your body becomes more responsive to insulin. The opposite of insulin sensitivity, high insulin resistance, is the root problem in type 2 diabetes and has also been linked to a number of diseases including heart disease, stroke, Alzheimer's disease, type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, abdominal obesity, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, fatty liver disease, polycystic ovary syndrome, gout, atherosclerosis, gastroesophageal reflux disease, obstructive sleep apnea, cancer. Lowering insulin also rids the body of excess salt and water, because insulin is well known to cause salt and water retention in the kidneys. This is why low-carbohydrate diets often cause diuresis, the loss of excess water. In fact, much of the initial weight lost on a low-carb diet is water. This diuresis is beneficial in reducing bloating and helping you feel lighter. Some may also note a lower blood pressure. Electrolytes remain stable. Electrolytes are certain minerals in the blood. They include sodium, chloride, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and phosphorus. The body keeps these blood levels under very tight control in order to maintain health. Prolonged studies of fasting have found no evidence of electrolyte imbalances. The body has mechanisms in place to keep electrolytes stable during fasting. Sodium and chloride. These minerals are found primarily in salt. Daily salt requirements are quite low, and most of us exceed this by many orders of magnitude. During short-term fasts, salt depletion is not a concern. During prolonged fasts, more than 1 week, the kidneys are able to reabsorb and retain most of the salt needed by the body. However, rarely some salt supplementation may be required. Potassium, calcium, magnesium, and phosphorus. Potassium levels may decrease slightly during fasting, but they'll remain in the normal range. Magnesium, calcium, and phosphorus levels are also stable during fasting. The bones carry large stores of these minerals, 99% of what's in the human body. Normally, some minerals are lost in the stool and urine, but during fasting, that loss is minimized. However, in children and pregnant and breastfeeding women, there is an ongoing demand for these minerals, so fasting is not advisable. Other vitamins and minerals. The daily use of a general multivitamin supplement will provide the recommended daily amount of micronutrients. A therapeutic fast of 382 days was maintained with only a multivitamin with no harmful effects on health. In fact, this man felt terrific during the entire period. In a study of supervised fasts with only water and vitamins lasting up to 117 days, researchers confirmed that there were no changes in serum electrolytes, lipids, proteins, or amino acids. Moreover, they found that hunger was virtually absent during these prolonged fasts. Adrenaline increases and metabolism speeds up. Most people expect that a period of fasting will leave them feeling tired and drained of energy. However, the vast majority of people experience the exact opposite. They feel energized and revitalized during fasting. Partly this is because the body is still being fueled, it's just getting energy from burned fat rather than burning food. But it's also because adrenaline is used to release stored glycogen and to facilitate fat burning, even if blood sugar is high. The increased adrenaline levels invigorate us and stimulate the metabolism. In fact, studies show that after a 4-day fast, resting energy expenditure increased by 12%. Rather than slowing the metabolism, fasting revs it up. Growth hormone goes up. Human growth hormone, HGH, is made by the pituitary gland. As the name implies, it plays a huge role in the normal development of children and adolescents. Levels peak during puberty and gradually decrease with age. Excessively low growth hormone levels in adults leads to more body fat, less muscle mass, and decreased bone density, osteopenia. Growth hormone, along with cortisol and adrenaline, is a counter-regulatory hormone. These hormones signal the body to increase the availability of glucose, countering the effect of insulin and producing higher blood sugar levels. Levels of counter-regulatory hormones peak just before waking at approximately 4 a.m. or so, increasing blood sugar levels, which fall during the night. The increase prepares the body for the upcoming day by making more glucose available for energy. Growth hormone also increases the availability of fats for fuel by raising levels of key enzymes such as lipoprotein lipase and hepatic lipase. Since burning fat reduces the need for glucose, This helps maintain stable blood sugar. Many of the effects of aging may result from low growth hormone levels. Replacing growth hormone in older people with low levels has significant anti-aging benefits. A randomized controlled study found that in men, 6 months of growth hormone replacement increased lean mass, bone and muscle, by an astounding 3.7 kilograms, 8.2 pounds, even as fat mass decreased by 2.4 kilograms, 5.3 pounds. Similar results were found in women. However, exogenous growth hormone, that is, growth hormone that isn't made by your own body, carries the risk of unwanted side effects. Blood sugar levels can increase to pre-diabetic levels, blood pressure also goes up, and there is a theoretical increased risk of prostate cancer and heart problems. For these reasons, injections of artificial growth hormone are used rarely. But what if we could boost growth hormone naturally? Meals very effectively suppress the secretion of growth hormone. So if we're eating 3 meals per day, we get effectively no growth hormone during the day. Worse, overeating suppresses growth hormone levels by as much as 80%. The most potent natural stimulus to growth hormone secretion is fasting. In one study, over a 5-day fasting period, growth hormone secretion more than doubled. During fasting, in addition to the usual early morning spike of growth hormone, pulsatile, there is also regular secretion throughout the day, non-pulsatile. Both pulsatile and non-pulsatile release of growth hormone is increased during fasting. Interestingly, very low-calorie diets are not able to provoke the same growth hormone response. A study of a religious 40-day fast found that baseline growth hormone levels increased from 0.73 nanograms per milliliter to peak at 9.86 nanograms per milliliter. That is a 1,250% increase in growth hormone, all done without drugs. And a 1992 study showed a 5-fold increase in growth hormone in response to a 2-day fast. Sidebar: benefits for athletes. All these hormonal changes may be particularly beneficial for athletes. First, their net physiological effect is to maintain lean mass, muscle, and bone over the fasting period, which has enormous implications for athletes. Second, while studies are few, the higher growth hormone level may improve recovery time from hard workouts. The increased adrenaline also allows a more intense workout. Athletes can train harder and recover faster. Many elite athletes are becoming more interested in the advantages of training in the fasted state. It is not by accident that many of the early proponents of training in the fasted state are bodybuilders. This is a sport that demands, in particular, high-intensity training and extremely low body fat. Brad Pilon, author of Eat, Stop, Eat, and Martin Burkan, who popularized the lean gains method of fasting, are both bodybuilders. The importance of healthy eating. Of course, fasting isn't a cure-all. Healthy eating still matters. Modern medicine's greatest challenges are metabolic diseases, obesity, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, high blood cholesterol, and fatty liver, collectively known as metabolic syndrome. The presence of any of these diseases tremendously increases the risk of heart disease, stroke, cancer, and premature death. And the roots of metabolic syndrome lie in the Western diet, with its abundance of sugar, high fructose corn syrup, artificial flavors, artificial sweeteners, and overdependence on refined grains. Societies that have kept their traditional patterns of eating are not afflicted with these metabolic disorders. This book focuses on one particular facet of traditional eating patterns that is virtually forgotten in today's society: intermittent fasting. However, this is only part of the solution. For optimal health, it is not enough to simply add fasting to your life. You must also focus on healthy eating patterns. What healthy eating doesn't mean. There's a tendency to define a healthy eating pattern as simply some combination of macronutrients. There are only 3 macronutrients: carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. Many healthy diets recommended by experts specify some percentage of these 3. For example, the older dietary guidelines for Americans advise keeping dietary fat to less than 30% of total calories. The widespread adoption of nutrition and calorie labels on packaged food has unfortunately contributed to this view. While this may appear scientific, there is no real basis for these recommendations. The underlying assumption of macronutrient-based guidelines is that all fats are equal, all carbohydrates are equal, and all proteins are equal. However, this is clearly false. Extra virgin olive oil is not the same as trans fat-laden margarine, even though both are pure fat. Our bodies respond completely differently to each one. Protein from wild salmon is not the same as highly refined gluten, which is a protein even though it's found in grains. Carbohydrates from sugar are not the same as carbohydrates from broccoli or kale. White bread is not the same as white beans. There are simple and easily measurable differences in the way our bodies metabolize these different foods. The same holds true for calories. Dietary guidelines that specify calorie limits unwittingly assume that all calories are equal, but 100 calories of a green salad does not have the fattening effect as 100 calories of chocolate chip cookies. Relying on macronutrient-based guidelines or calorie limits makes eating far more complicated than it should be. We do not eat a specific percentage of fats, protein, and carbohydrates. We eat foods. Certain foods are more fattening than others. Therefore, the best advice focuses on eating or not eating specific foods, not specific nutrients. Because consistently high insulin levels are the root cause of all the diseases of metabolic syndrome, it's especially important for those with metabolic syndrome to consider how foods stimulate the release of insulin. Fasting, of course, is the ultimate weapon in your arsenal when it comes to lowering insulin levels, since all foods stimulate insulin to some degree. The best way to lower insulin is to eat nothing at all. However, we cannot fast indefinitely, so there are some simple rules to follow to lower insulin levels. Eat whole, unprocessed foods. Humans evolved to eat a wide range of foods without detrimental health consequences. The Inuit peoples traditionally ate diets extremely high in animal products, which means high percentages of fat and protein. Others, such as the Okinawans, ate a traditional diet based on root vegetables, which means it's high in carbohydrates. But both populations traditionally did not suffer metabolic diseases. These only appeared with the increasing westernization of their diets. What humans haven't evolved to eat are highly processed foods. During processing, the natural balance of macronutrients, fiber, and micronutrients is completely disrupted. For example, processing the wheat berry to remove all the fat and protein means that the result, white flour, is almost pure carbohydrates. Wheat berries are natural. White flour is not. It is also ground to an extremely fine consistency that greatly speeds the absorption of carbohydrates into the bloodstream. Most other processed grains suffer the same problems. Our body has evolved to handle natural foods, and when we feed it unnatural ones, the result is illness. Imagine a beautiful red Ferrari sports car sitting in the driveway. Then imagine that we process it by removing the doors and wheels and adding bicycle tires and rusty blue doors from a truck. Is it the same car? Not at all. There is nothing inherently unhealthy about carbohydrate-containing foods. The problem arises when we start changing these foods from their natural state and then consuming them in large amounts. The same also applies to processed fats. Processing transforms relatively innocuous vegetable oils into fats that contain trans fats, toxins whose dangers have now been well recognized. Foods should be recognizable in their natural state as something that was alive or has come out of the ground. Boxes of Cheerios do not grow in the ground. If it comes prepackaged in a bag or a box, it should be avoided. If it has a nutrition label, it should be avoided. Real foods, whether broccoli or beef, have no labels. The true secret to healthy eating is this: just eat real food. Reduce sugars and refined grains. Avoiding all processed foods is preferable, but not always 100% possible for many reasons. It is therefore important to recognize which foods are the biggest offenders so that we may avoid them. For everyone, but especially for those with metabolic syndrome, it is most important to avoid sugars and refined grains such as flour and corn products. These are more fattening than other foods even when they contain the same number of calories, which is why low-carbohydrate diets are effective for weight loss. Eat more natural fats. For many decades, dietary fat was considered public enemy number one. We'll talk more about the misconceptions behind low-fat diets for weight loss in Chapter 5 and for heart health in Chapter 8. Gradually, health authorities have come to recognize that it has been unfairly targeted. In fact, although the term healthy fats was once considered an oxymoron, they're now just a well-accepted fact of life. Foods high in monounsaturated fats, such as olive oil, nuts, and avocados, which were previously shunned, are now considered superfoods because they are so healthy. Consuming fatty fish, such as wild salmon, has been proven to reduce the risk of heart disease. And more evidence is showing that naturally occurring saturated fats, such as those found in meat and dairy, are also not harmful to our health. Eat less artificial fats. But not all fats are so innocent. Partially hydrogenated vegetable oils found in foods such as shortening, deep-fried foods, margarine, and baked goods, such as cakes and cookies, contain trans fats, which our bodies do not handle well. Trans fats raise LDL bad cholesterol and lower HDL good cholesterol, increasing the risk of heart disease and stroke. Highly processed vegetable oils such as corn, sunflower, and canola oils were once considered heart healthy. It's easy to mistake corn oil, for instance, for a natural fat. But actually, corn is not naturally oily. To fill the bottle of corn oil you can buy so cheaply in the supermarket requires processing literally tons of corn. And as it turns out, recent data suggests that these oils are very high in inflammatory omega-6 fats. While some omega-6 fats are necessary, we are likely eating 10 to 20 times more than we did in the past, and when our consumption of omega-6 fats is out of balance with our consumption of omega-3 fats found in fatty cold water fish, nuts, and seeds, the result is systemic inflammation, which is a factor in heart disease, type 2 diabetes, inflammatory bowel disease, and other chronic illnesses. Eating more healthy fats and avoiding artificial fats, such as partially hydrogenated oils and highly processed vegetable oils, is key for good health. The basics of good nutrition can be summarized in these simple rules. Eat whole, unprocessed foods. Avoid sugar. Avoid refined grains. Eat a diet high in natural fats. Balance feeding with fasting. Different kinds of fasting. There are many different ways to fast, and there is no one correct way to do it. An absolute fast withholds both food and liquid. This may be done for religious purposes, such as during the holy month of Ramadan in the Muslim tradition. During that time, no food or drink is consumed during the period between sunrise and sunset. Medically, this combines the food restriction of fasting with dehydration due to the restriction of fluids. This makes an absolute fast much more physically difficult and limits the duration to fairly short periods. Absolute fasts are not generally recommended for health purposes. The accompanying dehydration confers no additional health benefits that compensate for the increase in difficulty. The risk of medical complications is also much higher with absolute fasts. We will cover many different fasting schedules later in the book. Intermittent fasting can be successfully implemented with either short fasts, less than 24 hours, or longer fasts, more than 24 hours. Extended fasting more than 3 days can also be safely used for weight loss and other health benefits. We'll explain in detail the best practices for fasting in Chapter 10, but in general, we encourage consuming plenty of non-caloric liquids, water, tea, coffee, and homemade bone broth, which is full of nutrients. Overall effects of fasting. What about potential side effects of fasting? Increased glucose? Nope. Increased blood pressure? Nope. Higher risk of cancer? Nope. Actually, fasting has the opposite effects. Lower glucose, lower blood pressure, and lower risk of cancer. Plus, we reap all the benefits of the increased growth hormone. Fasting does not make you tired. Fasting does not burn muscle. There is no starvation mode from fasting where you shrivel up into the fetal position on your couch. Rather, fasting has the potential to unleash the anti-aging properties of growth hormone without any of the problems of taking artificial growth hormone. In future chapters, we'll look in depth at how fasting helps with weight loss in Chapter 5 and type 2 diabetes in Chapter 6, boosts brain power and slows aging in Chapter 7, and improves heart health in Chapter 8. All of these benefits are achieved without drugs, supplements, or any costs. Samantha, Fasting Success Story. In 1999, I was diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS, a condition associated with insulin resistance that also includes other horrible symptoms such as weight gain, hirsutism, a skin condition called acanthosis nigricans, and early development of diabetes. I tried lots of things to fix my PCOS, natural herbs, progesterone therapy, and so on. Nothing worked. In May 2015, when I was 37, I was also diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I had been trying to prevent this, and here it was anyway. My grandmother had suffered with it for years and experienced massive blood clots and loss of the use of her hands and eyes, and she eventually died from its complications. My mother-in-law died from a diabetes-related heart attack at age 62. Two elderly neighbors had lost their legs to it. I already knew diabetes is evil and unmerciful. It steals from you every day, makes your life miserable, and then kills you. I figured I'd be dead by 60, maybe 70 if I was lucky. My doctor didn't give me any hope either. She said, "Diabetes is a progressive disease. The medication I'm going to prescribe you will help delay the consequences of having diabetes for about 10 years, but after that, you will develop some or all of these symptoms: loss of your eyesight, loss of the use of your legs and or feet, or possibly loss of those limbs entirely, loss of sensation in your hands, high blood pressure, which could result in stroke or heart attack, pain in different areas of your body." I asked her if I could resolve this with diet and exercise. In response, she just repeated, "Diabetes is a progressive disease." I was just looking for any hope, even a slim chance that I could beat this. Instead, she gave me 4 prescriptions to treat my diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. But I had no intention of taking any medication. I knew one thing for sure. Everyone I knew who'd got on diabetes medication had lived miserably and eventually died from the disease. I spent several hours that night researching on the internet, and I discovered Dr. Jason Fung. He was the only person, let alone doctor, that I found who not only advocated a diet change, but pinpointed fasting as the key. I started immediately on a water-only fasting regimen. I used mostly 3 to 5 day fasts because I wanted quick results that I couldn't undo by eating something wrong. I wasn't focused on weight loss, but on beating diabetes. Still, I lost 12 pounds the first month and then 6 pounds a month thereafter for 30 pounds in 4 months. I went from 256 pounds to 226 pounds. Although alternate day fasting doesn't slow your metabolism, multiple-day fasts do seem to slow it a little, but the improvement in insulin sensitivity is well worth a long fast over a short one. In addition to fasting regularly, I changed my diet, Dr. Fung supports any whole food approach that limits processed foods, in addition to fasting, without dictating which diet is best. I chose to do low carb. Previously, everything I ate was underpinned with rice or pasta. Now I learned that meat and vegetables alone are fine. I underpin my foods with bulgur wheat, finely chopped and sautéed cauliflower, spaghetti squash, or just well-buttered and seasoned vegetables. I try to mix cheese and nuts into every meal because they fill me up. I even learned how to make sweet and spicy hot wings using hot sauce, balsamic vinegar, xylitol, and oil from the renderings from baking the wings. For the first month on my fasting regimen, I took a multivitamin, magnesium, B-complex vitamin, and vitamin D every day. For the second month, I used only magnesium, a B-complex vitamin, potassium, and Himalayan pink salt. It helped reduce the coldness in my feet and hands for some reason. I started supplementing with 500 to 1,000 mcg of chromium per day starting in month 3. It really helped me to get my blood sugars to fall to preprandial levels within 2 hours of eating a meal instead of 4 hours. In September 2015, 4 months after I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and began my fasting regimen, I got a blood sugar reading in the 70s for the first time ever. This reading was so unusual for me that I had to go back and look up what was normal. I wasn't expecting it, but fasting also resolved the PCOS. The fact is, I have not been this healthy ever. Even when I was 20 years old in the military and had 21% body fat, running 3 to 5 miles per day, 5 days per week, I was not this healthy. Here's what happened, symptom by symptom. Immediately after I started fasting, the tingling, numbness, swelling, and burning in my left foot went away. A burning in my left upper thigh near my hip took longer to go away, but after 4 months, I had complete relief. My fingers used to go to sleep, and now that happens rarely and is limited.